struck something soft, like the back of Mog's legs, it would feel like a hammer blow. So Ryan swung the post close to the ground and caught the stumbling Mog around the ankles. Blood began to spurt from the wound as a length of chain wrapped itself around his leg, binding him like a slave in heavy leg irons. Ryan jerked the post back and forth, twisting and turning Mog's leg in a number of unnatural directions. The big man screamed, and the deep bass howl of pain silenced the spectators as they wondered if their champion might fall, or even worse, be chilled at the hands of the Outlander. Ryan unwound the chain, leaving behind an angry red wound and a ruined foot that seemed to hang from his leg by a string.
Leave the ring, and I won't show you.
Fuck you, One-Eye!
Ryan raised the post over his head and threw the pointed edge to the ground between Mog's legs. Blood spurted up from the wound. Ryan could feel the giant scream in the pit of his stomach.
Last chance to live.
Fuck you!
Ryan pulled the post from the ground and brought it down again, harder this time, piercing Mog's throat and smashing apart his neck. The dying man gurgled a few wet and bloody words, and then fell silent. Ryan looked up at Christy, who was smiling, as much in relief as joy. She mouthed the words, "Well done, lover," slowly, so Ryan could understand. Ryan nodded at her, then slowly headed to where his clothes lay in a heap. His ribs were on fire, and the cut on his arm stung from the sweat and dirt that was running into the wound. He needed to get dressed as quickly as possible to have some place to hide his panga if he wanted to leave the circle with it in his possession. When he put on his shirt, he made sure the big blade was concealed within it. Then when he slipped into his pants, he was able to slide the long knife into the rear of his waistband. It wasn't the best place for the knife, but hopefully it would be hidden well enough to get it past the sec men. By the time he was fully dressed, the sec chief had come down from the stage and had entered the circle, holding Christie's arm and leading her like a horse. Up on the stage, the Baron raised his hand and addressed the crowd.
"You've done well, One-Eye. You've defeated our champion and provided us with some of the best entertainment we've had in months."
"I don't show people for sport,"
Grunwald admonished Ryan under his breath.
"Can it, One-Eye. You cross the Baron now, and you'll be full of blaster holes before you take a step. Keep your mouth shut, and you get to spend the night with Pretty Little Red here."
Ryan looked at Christy, saw her smile, and steeled himself from saying or doing any more.
"And now, as the winner of our little contest, you shall have a prize like no other. A rutting mate of exquisite beauty. You will create offspring of exceptional quality, and when you do, all will be taken care of. And you will yet again be rewarded for your service to your Baron."
The crowd rose to their feet and began chanting.
"Baron Cox relieves the burden! Baron Cox relieves the burden! Baron Cox relieves the burden!"
Ryan thought of Dean, about having to turn him over to a complete stranger as some sort of prize, or product made in a factory or mill, and his blood began to boil. Sec Chief Grunwald presented her to Ryan as his prize. As he did so, Christy sensed Ryan's anger beginning to build.
"Easy, lover. This is not the time for it."
Ryan nodded. Christy was right, of course.
"We can chill the Baron tomorrow. Tonight is for us."
She kissed him then, her tongue darting into his mouth and probing deeply. Ryan returned the kiss, holding Christy in his arms as tightly as his aching ribs allowed. The crowd roared in approval. Even the Baron seemed pleased. Night had fallen. The underground garage remained illuminated by a few naked bulbs and smelled of cooked fish, machine oil, and sweating bodies. JB had finished arming the WAG. It had 50 caliber blasters at the northwest and southeast corners of its cargo bed. Instead of fixing the 37mm cannon to the side of the WAG as he'd intended, the armorer had to bolt it onto the hood of the WAG. But in order to allow the huge blaster enough room, the WAG's windshield and rear window had to be removed, which allowed the breech of the cannon to sit in the cargo area where it could be reloaded with shells. Jack and Dean would man the 50s, while Doc's job would be loading the cannon. That left JB the job of driving the WAG, and more importantly, aiming the cannon. Clarissa would ride up front, bearing smaller arms. It would be her task to protect JB from any threat from close range. The armorer would have his Uzi within reach, but his attention would be focused on driving and positioning the cannon.
I must say, John Barrymore, that this time you have outdone even yourself. You've turned this wag into an awesome fighting vehicle, and you are to be commended.
Feeling better, Doc?
Yes, I am. The comforting ministrations of the young woman, Clarissa, did much to calm my nerves and rejuvenate my spirit. In a way, I was reminded of my dear Emily. Why, it was almost worth catching cold just to have her make a fuss over me.
The time traveler was beginning to ramble. JB grabbed his arm and gave it a firm shake.
Doc!
Doc stopped talking, and his body shuddered slightly, as if he'd just been awakened from a dream.
Yes?
Get some rest. Mildred, Christy, and Ryan, they're waiting for us. We leave at first light.
Oh, yes, of course. Some rest might do me some good.
Mildred sat on the cot she'd set up in the nursery and let out a long sigh. She had tended to Brody's leg as best she could, set it in a splint so he wouldn't tear the stitches, and given him something for the pain. Then she'd wheeled him over so he could spend some quiet time with Jasmine. After that, she'd watched over both of them for a few hours to make sure infection or any other complications didn't set in. Now, with the lights in the nursery turned down and her charges asleep for the night, Mildred lay down and rested for the first time all day. The moment her head hit the pillow, she was asleep and dreaming of her days as a young intern. The big clawfoot bathtub in Christie's room was full of hot, steaming water. Ryan lay back in the tub, his arms stretched out over the sides, his body's energy depleted, and close to exhaustion. Christie ran a soapy sponge across Ryan's chest, cleaning away the afternoon's blood and grime. Ryan's ribs still ached, but now that he'd had some time to rest, the pain had ebbed to a level he could tolerate. The cut on his shoulder had also cleaned up well, the wound having looked far worse than it really was. Christie squeezed the sponge and let the water flow over Ryan's broad, muscular shoulders and guided it down his chest and over his stomach toward the water. Ryan flinched the moment the sponge traced a line over his aching ribs.
Sore lover?
A bit tender is all, but I'll manage.
Christie kept her hand under the water, but let go of the sponge and let it float to the surface. Ryan could feel her fingers caressing him between his legs. He quickly became aroused.
I thought you were tired, lover.
I am.
But not too tired?
Never too tired for you.
I can see that.
As the Baron said, to the victor go the spoils.
Christie joined him in the tub. They made love long into the night. JB had roused the group before the sun rose, and they spent the first hour of the day just getting the wag started. After having sat in the garage for several months, the wag's battery had run down and was without power. So instead of using the wag's starter motor, the group had to push the wag while JB used the clutch to put the vehicle in gear. JB wasted no time getting everyone on the wag and moving. The exhaust fumes had a foul smell to them, and the less they had to breathe them in, the better. The group pulled the wag out of the underground garage just as dawn broke over the horizon. The sky was a dazzling shade of orange, and the cloud cover that had been hanging over them the past 2 days was now all but gone. They left the garage and soon turned onto Niagara Falls Boulevard. With an open road in good condition in front of them, JB opened up the throttle, and the rumbling noise from the engine smoothed out into a loud but regular hum. They drove several blocks along the boulevard until they found the remains of a building that suited their needs. JB stopped the wag about a city block from a deserted and crumbling bank building on Pine Avenue, keeping the engine running in the hopes that it would recharge the wag's battery. The east wall of the bank building was made of bricks and painted white and would provide an excellent test target for the 37mm cannon. JB judged the distance to be about 100 yards, well within the range of the cannon and the 50 calibers, but a tough distance to cover with small arms fire, especially from remades like those used by the farm's sec men.
Put a round in!
In the back of the wag, Doc loaded one of the better shells into the cannon's breech. They had decided to try the shells in the order of the ones in best condition first, because if the cannon didn't fire the best quality shells, it probably wouldn't fire at all.
Ready!
JB paused a moment, knowing that the cannon barrel could just as